on DNA strands, and what they have identified is a part of the strand, T268, I believe it is the piece that is identical in every addicted person, but is not there for the non-addicted. So what that basically, where the research is going, is if there is an addicted predictor in the DNA, then we're going to be able to tell some things there that'll help us in the future. There's a danger to that. Person knows that they don't have it, then they may go out and use more drugs. But that study's there. The other piece is a thing called social learning theory that people use because the people around them are using. So they get caught up in it, just would call that peer pressure. And those that are in that, those are the ones that can say, I don't know why you don't just quit. I just put it down, I quit using it, and you know that's college stuff or that was high school stuff. I don't do that anymore. I'm getting on with my life, and I don't know why you can't. And generally the answer to that is the reason you can't is because it doesn't identify both ways are the same way in your life. The addicted person who has a genetic propensity toward does not know that they have that. And so what will happen is the first use is like flipping a light switch on that doesn't have an off button, doesn't have an off position. And once the light switch is on, it's always on. That's the addicted person. That's the one that's got to live with the fact that we turn the light switch on, we open the Pandora's box, and now for the rest of our life, we have to cope with that. If I have time this week, I'll talk about a thing called your amygdala that's in your midbrain that will address more of that. But that's not this topic. Let's talk about the family that spends Friday night sitting around the table doing this. Anybody know anybody like that? Okay. You go out to a restaurant or you're sitting somewhere and folks are doing this and so forth. And even we don't talk a lot on the phone anymore. We text. Okay. Well, in our modern age, it is nice that we have devices that will help us. But sometimes that which is intended to help us can in fact destroy us. And so in this presentation, we want to talk a little bit about about being networked. And I want to talk a little bit on the positive side about this, because all electronic devices are not bad. As a matter of fact, they're kind of neutral. It's how we use them that's the issue. So I want to talk a little bit about social media. And in this, we're going to be reviewing some social media platforms, some target audiences for different platforms, the benefits and dangers. I'll spend a lot of time on that. And then how does the Christian know when too much is too much? So we live in a world that largely kind of happened and has happened so rapidly and is changing so rapidly that it wasn't defined and the rules weren't in place before it was in full motion. And it's changing now so much that the rules change. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. Let's look at our social media. And for some, this will be a primer. And for others, it'll be some new information. But Facebook, for instance, is one of the social media pages. It's probably the most active one. It has 2 billion monthly active users. That means it's very busy. And it's a place where you can have extended connections. You can connect with people all around the world. It'll suggest friends to you, people that you may know, somebody from your past may pop up and you can either friend them or remove them. There'll be shared posts. You can be invited into private rooms where people have a chat line. Sacred Selection, Wilson and Julie Adams have a private section where they talk about their adoption and kind of ongoing saga with that. But there'll be shared posts. You can forward things. You can boost things. paid advertisement. A lot of people use that for advertising. The average user of Facebook is about 30 plus years old. Now that's important if you as a congregation are looking at how do you reach people via social media. But about 30 years old, and the premier contact is, it gives you the ability to do live video. And some of our brethren are doing live video teachings that way. All right. An example of that, if you want to check it, is the Traders Point Church of Christ in Indianapolis. They do an excellent job of using Facebook to promote the congregation. By the way, these PowerPoints are available to you as well. The second one is Twitter. Probably our president has made that more famous than it was. But Twitter has 319 million active users. And it facilitates professional contacts. The average users are either celebrities or businesses. That's your average user trying to reach a mass audience. And the premier content is pictures or messages in a short form, 140 characters or less. So quick message, kind of just a bleep, and then you're on to something else. An example of that, how that's being used in a church group, is a group called the Gospel Coalition, and you might want to check that site to see how they're using Twitter in their evangelism. Snapchat scares me, but we'll say a little bit about that. There's 66 million daily users, about 150 million globally. It facilitates private conversation, private interaction, and the danger of that is with Snapchat, often what you put in there disappears as soon as it's read and responded to. It'll disappear. So tracking that is a little difficult. I'm especially concerned if we've got youth that are involved with that. But the average user of that is generally age 18 and up. All right, and I don't know anybody that's using that well in evangelism. Instagram is another one, about 70 million monthly users. And it basically operates by pictures and daily stories. And the average user of Instagram is in the teen 14 to about 30 years old. This is their information. And the stories are in generally 15-second increments or less. So it's kind of a real quick, real fast kind of a response. The Embry Hills Church in Atlanta, Georgia, is using this mechanism with their sermon notes and using that for evangelism. So these methods, let's talk about YouTube. YouTube has 1.3 billion total users. About 300 hours of video are available, about 300 hours of video are uploaded every minute. 5 billion videos are watched each day. So you can see a value in that if you're on the positive end of it. And it facilitates video hosting. The average user, we don't know, and they're not telling us. The premier content of this is videos. All right, a group called the Bible Project uses this very effectively in promoting evangelism. So when we look at how can the church use the social media. The church can use this to make contact with its members through social media, can have folks in groups, and so we can have Christians, and we can also invite non-Christians to view our content. And then you can ask other people to join in with you, and this thing takes on a life of its own with information kind of feeding out in multiple directions. That's how it can be used effectively. So lots of folks can be contacted with this single post. But with the media, or with social media and digital devices, there can be positives and there can be negatives. And I want to suggest that the child of God has to be ready and has to be aware of what the dangers are. Because generally on these mechanisms, what happens is they operate usually by impulse. And so a person checks something and they hit respond or reply. They want to get out here and interact, and sometimes interact in very ungodly ways. Even those that are members of the church may have some snippy, snappy thing that they put out there they haven't thought through. But once it's out there, it's kind of out there. And we can respond in ungodly ways. Well, this is a fact amongst us. One of the things I understand Elijah's doing, getting this off the ground here, is a thing called Meetup, where you actually can tell people, hey, we're going to have a beginner's Bible study over at McDonald's at 10 o'clock on Monday morning. And people are invited to come and to invite their friends. And that can, when that takes place, that can be very productive. Actually, the church at Brownsburg, Indiana, is using that. And they have 87 people that are in their Meetup group. And from that, they have people that will come and do different studies on different topics or be present for different studies on different topics. They do not meet at the church building because sometimes affiliation with a building, people feel a little funny about that. So they meet down at McDonald's, or they may meet in some other place that has low overhead noise where they can hear each other. But with that in mind, there are some good things that can happen on social media. There are some good things can happen with our computers. We live in an age of rapid information. And for us to say that we need to throw all this in the trash can because it has been misused by some, I think would be an overstatement. But what we do have is some folks that aren't going to be able to make it to heaven because of their digital devices. And so how are we going to be able to control these things? What are the rules? What's the child of God do? How do we train our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? One thing that was said at a symposium on pornography with 20 different speakers over in Charlotte, North Carolina, I believe that was a month or so ago, one of the things that was said by every speaker that got up, every speaker, they took their phone and they said, "Do not let your child have one of these." Now, I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is when your child has one of these, they have access to the entire world, and the entire world has access to your child without your permission, unless you've got some safeguards. That's pretty dangerous. How many of us would send our kid down the street into danger areas unescorted? Probably none of us. How many of us would send our kids into pollution, corruption, and places where someone's going to distort and twist their mind or talk them into things that we would not endorse? And I would again say probably none of us. But essentially what happens is when these are misused, that they can take a person to a world of corruption very quickly. Bullying can take place on these, and sometimes does. And our people don't always tell us that's going on. Sometimes scripts are out there. As a matter of fact, even now in job searches, a lot of folks will go out there on your social media to see what kind of statements you've made. More than one person's been fired because they came back and sounded off about their boss on social media. So people are watching, and people are getting the impression of who you are from your social media. As a matter of fact, you would be amazed if we were to run your name, and you'd be amazed at the things we could find out from each one of you, and that you can find out about me by going out there and see what's posted. A lot of things. A lot of scary things, too. You can find out through these devices. So there are some dangers built into this. And I want to talk about some of those tonight. Oh, I didn't say that on these you can also get Bible. And concordances and things I used to have to pay dearly for like International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, that's out there free now. So you get a lot of good things. I can go on a gospel meeting and have a library right on my hip. That's a good thing. But if it's used properly. Okay. But we can use it for a lot of different kinds of things. What does God want from us as parents? And I'm going to talk to parents first. God has always requested that parents teach their children about Him. And if we want to use this device to accomplish that, we can do that. But Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7, you shall teach them diligently, talking about the words of God, to your children. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Sometimes the electronic devices get in the way of those conversations. So I would suggest that you have some rules in place regarding the use of your digital devices. And allow time for real human contact. I'm going to tell you why a little later in this presentation. When I read that verse, I think about social media. It's all around us. And what have these devices done to our family time? Before this ever came out, I had to stop one of the exercises I was doing that I called the family dinner table. And there I was looking at where people sit at the dinner table when they were a child, comparing that to where they sit in the boardroom, because the configuration of the family of origin generally duplicates itself in the boardroom, and the conflicts are almost parallel. I had to stop that exercise because I ran into a group of the millennials. Is it the millennials? Yeah. I ran into a group that didn't eat at the dinner table. They came in, grabbed a bite to eat. They just kind of ran through the kitchen, grabbed something to eat, and left. So the family stopped getting together. But anymore, not only have we stopped getting together, but we've also stopped talking to each other in our family settings. I want to suggest that if we are not able to control our digital devices, that we need to make some family rule to where we get those things under control. Or that we take a hiatus, a break, a digital fast, if you would. And we go on a fast. I've talked to several families about that, and they've had issues even trying to do that, to live without their devices at home. But those that have found interesting things. That includes the television. And they found interesting things happen when they get out the board games and they start talking to each other again and interacting as a family, going places, doing things, going down the street to get a Dairy Queen, those kinds of things. And what they found is that there's a whole world there that they've been missing because they've allowed the digitals to take over their world. Well, how are we going to be able to train our children in God's ways when we've got the world training them through the digital devices? Satan is very active and very busy tutoring our families. Don't be surprised when he comes to a phone or a device near you. There's a young man, actually he's not so young, he's middle age, who his device has created a significant problem for him. Because he got out on Facebook, and in a day of boredom, he chatted with some lady out there, and they struck up a relationship, a digital relationship. And ultimately, it ended up with, send me a nude picture of you, and I'll send you one of me. And he did. And his daughter found it and shared it with his wife. And she's hot as a firecracker, like she should be. But those kinds of things are out there. With the nude snapshots, that is a more frequent thing. If you love me, people in early relationships often, if you really love me, take a picture with your top off and send it to me, if you love me. Well, once those things are out there, they're out there. They shouldn't be out there to start with. But once they're out there, that's a done deal. There, even when you try to delete them, there are still ways to get to those. And that's a done deal. You want your boss to be looking at that, something like that, when you apply for a job, because it's out there under your heading. And such danger stuff is out there, and temptation to act out on media thinking nobody's gonna be harmed. Alright. But the principles in God's Word, Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That involves time and energy. And it's going to be hard to do that digitally. How do we fulfill that scripture? By the way, it's okay to say no to your child. If the child wants, the young person wants to have the latest device, then maybe the answer is no. That's not wise. Or let's talk about that. What do you plan to do with this? Why have this? Is this just to keep up with everybody around you? How do we as children bring our parents, bring our children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? And also, we want them to be involved in worship. One of the activities that concerns me in several places is we'll have people that will have their cell phones out. It's hard to tell, are you using that for your Bible, or are you sitting there on social media? And it's interesting, some of the stuff that parents have found afterwards, that their kids are there, they're not even paying attention. So, and adults too. So, some congregations have gone to a digital-free zone in their church buildings. That may not be a bad deal. Especially if you're posting what they need to see up on the board. Some inherent evils there. Technology is neither good nor bad. If the average teen is spending 9 hours a day consuming media through the digital devices, is it not a surprise that often they are doing it while they are doing their homework? Half of teens say they often or sometimes use social media or watch TV while doing their homework. Now the question is that a good thing or a bad thing? It can be a distracting thing. It can also be a multitasking thing. But what's going on when this is happening? So are we spending time with Bible study and prayer and helping our youth with other things? Or are we allowing them to spend 9 hours on average per day on these devices? Now, I'm going to talk about what this does to young people in just a moment. But we're plugged into the internet for all kinds of stuff. So is technology evil? Is it right? Is it good? Well, we use it for a lot of things. We check the news. We check the weather. We don't even buy a newspaper anymore because we found an app that will do that. You can find videos on how to do a tune-up on your car. I know because I did one, and I did not realize that my spark plugs were down inside my engine. I hadn't worked on a car like that before. Usually spark plugs where you get to them. You know, it took 6 hours to do a tune-up on my car, and I was watching on video how to do it. I had to take the wiper blades off to get to the parts that were hiding the manifold or the cover that was over the manifold to get to the tubes to get down to where I take care of the spark plugs. That was a mess. All right. Well, we can use it to check on elderly people. So there's some good things here. You can have a virtual library of religious things out on the media, sermon outlines, all kinds of things are out there that are at your disposal. But are there dangers? And the answer is yes. The internet and social media can become an idol to us. Now, an idol is anything that comes between you and God. We know that covetousness is idolatry. There can be other forms of idolatry where we worship these things. As a matter of fact, in the parenting classes that many people teach, What they will tell you is, if you were to use as a disciplinary measure with your child that you take away their cell phone, that you have taken away that child's life and access to all their peers and friends. That should never be. That should never be. We need direct contact with the real world. Our cell phones or our digital devices can introduce us to evils. They can pull us into pornography. They can lure us into those who are grooming online. And there are people who do that, who will feign that they are someone they aren't. Maybe they're another teenager, or they're someone that's going to listen to you, and your parents just don't treat you right, and they're going to tell you all kinds of things to lure you, and then ultimately, in some cases, white slavery ends up being the byproduct of that. Grooming people online. There are perverts out there that are fishing for young people such as we have here this evening. And the more innocent, the more vulnerable they are. All right? So there are just so many things out here. I'm going to go to another section here. So what is, and I'm going to leave that for just a second. So what are some of the dangers that are Hold on just a minute. Ha. The wrong piece of the lesson. All right, so some of the dangers that are here. What is the danger of internet addiction? Addiction, remember, is that which is a compulsive act. And often people will get caught in the compulsive act. How is it an addiction? In that it is obsessive. We dwell on it. We can't wait to check out what's going on. That's one of the criteria for an addiction, is that we are preoccupied with it. Another is that we have the inability to control it or to quit it. That's in that criteria for an addiction. Another piece here is that when a person is obsessing or thinking about this going online, then they are focused on this. Maybe they start, but then they just stay on it. They may be on it until way up into the wee hours of the morning. Those are three criteria. Remember what I said about other addictions? Three is qualifies you for inpatient. There's three of those nine right there if you think about them. So, internet addiction. One of the things with the digital world is, and it probably started back with programs like Sesame Street. Had you ever noticed that on these children's programs, about every 8 to 12 seconds, the scene changes? Somebody comes in, somebody goes out, something goes on. And there's a correlation in a number of studies with those shows and with surfing the web and with our digital devices. There's a number of studies that correlate that with the rise in diagnosis of ADD and ADHD. And that's because we've got these shifts of the mind. We train the brain to think in shifts. Now, when I sit in front of a device for 9 hours a day, or whatever the time is, and that's what I'm getting these flashes back and forth, then essentially I'm training the chemistry of my brain to respond that way, and thus we have ADD or ADHD-like symptoms that can occur. So we have a problem with people staying focused, staying on task. There's studies correlate that. Also, we see that this correlates with the cybersexual stuff. Cybersexual. That is, that people are using the adult chat rooms. They use adult fantasy. And develop negative relationships online versus intimate relationships. Do you run into anybody that say, yes, where'd you meet? And they said, we met on the internet. And we fell in love at a distance and we decided to get married. And when we got married, we realized that when you type things in, you can type something and somebody can respond. When you get together, someone dominates the conversation. It's not the same in real life. And you realize that you really can't stand each other. But it looked good when it was in not in real time. Cybersexual relationships can develop through texting, chat rooms, messaging to various points, compulsions such as gambling. And by the way, with young people, there is an increase in gambling online with young people, a significant increase, because they can go on and be any age that they want to be. And they go on there and sometimes get themselves in some pretty serious consequences. But the main thing here is information overload. That is, too much information just pumped into the head all at once. And that information is being processed often to the exclusion of social interaction. So when you ask a person, who are your friends? You know, when a lot of us grew up, they say, well, you need to go out and play. You stay in the house, go out and play. A lot of young people don't know how to go out and play anymore. They don't know how to go out and they don't have the friends. I think probably this congregation is an exception to that from what I saw in the last couple of days. But that can happen. And when that happens, then what goes on that makes this unhealthy is that, and realizing each person is different, is that there is a significant increase as there's a correlation as the digital increases, so do these other things. And those who suffer from anxiety or the obsessive compulsive disorders, we see an increase based on the digital. That's one of the things we ask in the assessment, is how much time do you spend online each day? And in other words, you're maybe isolated from the world. So the anxiety goes up. Dealing with real people in real time, those skills go down as we assess these individuals. We also see an increase as the digital increases, so do the depressive disorders in people who are isolated. And that's probably with good reason, because these folks end up being very lonely. They operate isolated, almost in a cubicle, and they're isolated from real life, real time, real interaction, and they're caught up in the fantasy world of being whoever they want to be, which may not be who they are. Well, it can lead to other addictions too, such as sexual addictions or drugs or alcohol. And there certainly is a lack of social support. And the result of all of that is those who spend excessive time with their digital devices report significantly being unhappy, some even suicidally unhappy. It increases not only anxiety and depression, the overuse of time on this, but it also increases the stress levels and the obsession to get back and see if so-and-so answered me and so forth. And so our heads out here in a cyber world versus living in the real world. All right. Now, some of that can be just life in this century. But some of that, when it starts getting obsessive, can be very dangerous to the proper development of our family and of our family's interaction with one another. What I suggest is that individuals need to set some rules in their family. When are digital devices okay to use? And is there a time limit on those? I suggest that we do that. Often people will get on these, they will lose track of time online. They have trouble completing the regular task that they are assigned at home or on the job. They are isolated from family and friends. And often they will get very defensive if you try to take this out of their life. So what I'm suggesting here is this, is that these things give us a break from the real world. What else is happening with that person during that time. What should be happening? There should be social development going on. There should be those stages, a la Piaget and all these other dudes out there from time past. But there should be some progressive, interactive kinds of things on how you deal with people. And you're missing out on that if you're trying to do that in real, in digital time. So now the question becomes, how do you catch up? And the way you catch up is you've got to limit the devices where people can catch up with their maturity levels and with their interactive abilities and training that brain, retraining the brain not to go into rapid fire and hypersensitive mode as we get everything flashing back and forth on a screen. That's what we're training ourselves to do in this digital world. All right. Now I want to look at some guidelines for how am I going to determine what rules can I use with my family? And I want to just ask some questions as to how we assess this. This is an assessment tool for how to assess this in your home. Do your posts cause people to think you're worldly? Now, that's a pretty simple thing. There's many passages talk about being the right kind of influence and presenting our bodies in the right way, and not to be like the world in the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. And these passages would indicate that. But do our posts reflect our Christianity, or do they cause people to think that we're a worldly person? I think that question needs to be asked. Is the practice questionable to you? So if I'm out here doing something that it feels like, well, I really need to be getting ready for services, I really need to be doing my Bible lesson, but then maybe that's a problem where it's a questionable deal to you. Is it something that is interfering with my Christianity? Again, we would ask the question, does your online activity cause other people to stumble? So if we're saying nasty things that cause someone to feel bad, to sound off, to feel like they're bullied, or to maybe engage in some activity that would be very much against what a Christian should do, then is it causing that? If so, then you don't need to be doing that. Is the online activity destructive to our body? And that question goes into how much sleep are you getting? If you're staying up half the night on a digital device and trying to get by on 2 or 3 hours sleep the next day, then your body is not getting its proper rest, and that's going to be destructive to your body. Is it going to be destructive to your body to be making rendezvous plans and slipping out at night or meeting up with people? Is this going to be destructive to you? And there's Bible verses on that as well. Does the online activity conflict with your responsibility as a Christian? Can I be a Christian and engage in this conversation, in this activity? Sometimes the answer to these questions are yes. And if so, then there's not a problem. But if the answer is no, then there is a problem. And that's why I suggest these as guideline questions. Another question I would ask is, does the online activity cause fleshly appetites to be aroused? In other words, am I viewing porn? Or am I reading nasty jokes? Or am I posting stuff like that? Does it cause that to be aroused in me? Or does it cause something I'm doing to be aroused in others? And if so, then that would be wrong. We'll talk more about that when we talk Friday night about the pornography addictions. A lot of crazy stuff out there on that. But does the online activity bring me in contact with weakening associations or relationships and influences? So what would be the answer to that as we reflect on how we're using our digital devices? 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, evil companions corrupt good morals. We're told to abstain from every form of evil in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. So that would be a very clear guideline. Does this connect me with people that are going to pull me down? And obviously, if we're dealing with a lot of people that are trying to fill our heads with worldly thoughts, challenge our Christianity in such a way that it is destructive to us, then we need to delete those kinds of things. More than one person has been deleted off of my Facebook and are blocked off the off my page. And most of them that I've done that to didn't appreciate it, but I didn't want to listen to what they were saying. I don't want that to go through my head or mind. If we answered yes to any of these questions, then it may mean that our Christianity is under attack or is being compromised. And we have to make some choices in regard to how we're going to use our digital devices. Now, we can go to heaven without a computer. We can go to heaven without a cell phone. But we can surely go to hell if we misuse these devices. That's a quick snapshot of digitals. And I know the hour's late and we all want to get home. But the thing is, we need to look very seriously at whether our electronic devices have hijacked our families, what they are doing to our relationships with each other, and realize that no digital device is going to be able to take the place of real-life contact with one another, social development as God designed it to be, and digital device and fantasy is not going to take us there. It will divert us from there, and maybe that's okay for a while. But it's not okay to live in that world where we are captured, enthralled, and don't know how to establish and maintain usual human relationships.